Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Biden finally bans Russian ships at U.S. ports. Maritime Trades Department cheering. We'll give you the details. A rally for jobs in northeastern Ohio 1 week from today. And on the show today, Ironworkers Local 89 in Iowa. An organizer running for office. He'll tell his story. And later in the show, the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Monday, April 25th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Joe Zahorek. Joe is an iron worker in the state of Iowa, Local 89 to be specific. He's been with the union for 17 years, started off as an apprentice, worked his way through the field, got some leadership roles both on the job site and in his local to eventually become the organizer for 89. He writes, from stagnant wages leading to an ever-growing wealth gap between the working class and the financial elites to the intentional dismantling of collective bargaining rights, Iowa's working families have faced more than our share of challenges. Now, as an organizer, I spend my days fighting for the exploited and vulnerable workers in an effort to ensure they receive fair wages, safe working environments, quality benefits, and access to both quality and affordable health care. So he's more than an iron worker. He's turning into a politician, and he's going to talk about his race. He wants to become a state rep in Iowa, which is a tough state for unions. He says, I know I can take this fight to a larger venue and have even more of an impact at the state capitol. I am a champion for working class families in the state, and I will do everything in my power, everything, to push back against the greed and cruelty of the anti-worker agenda they're currently facing, and we'll run down that agenda, what's not being done for workers. A couple of his priorities, wage theft, worker misclassification, which we see so much in the trades. We'll talk about the apprenticeship programs, and we'll get into Local 89, getting ready for the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which is going to benefit every state in the country. Keep going back to the push to repair or replace the bridges in America, at least 15,000 bridges, at least 15,000. And the iron workers pushed that through when they were negotiating that legislation. Greg Regan will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, and he is loaded today. First thing he's going to talk about is a hearing that is scheduled for tomorrow and Wednesday in response to a letter sent by the National Grain and Feed Association about the worsening situation with rail service in our country. It's really bad. And one of the problems, he's discussed this on the show a couple times, it's called PSR, Precision Scheduled Railroading, as being the cause of a lot of the service issues. PSR encouraged the railroads to trim their workforce, including staffing for the market-sensitive train and engine crews. And during the pandemic, we didn't see too much of that moving, but it's a different situation now. Demand is back. And as a result, the railroads don't have enough workers to manage the demand. I mean, literally tens of thousands of jobs disappeared in the last couple of years. And now the National Grain and Feed Association, which is obviously linked up with the farming community, is saying, well, wait a minute, we can't get our products to market. We have a problem here. So we'll touch on that. We'll also touch, and I never thought I'd be talking about this on the show, the definition of an assault. You know, when you assault somebody in a normal course of events, you're going to have a court case. It's a little bit different when a bus driver or a flight attendant is assaulted. And thankfully, with this new infrastructure law, the definition is being changed. And the provisions, this is in the new law, create a legal definition of assault as, quote, a circumstance in which an individual knowingly, without lawful authority or permission, and with intent to endanger the safety of any individual, or with a reckless disregard for the safety of human life, interferes with, disables, or incapacitates a transit worker while that worker is performing his or her duties. It also requires transit agencies to develop a risk reduction program for assaults, and there have been many. Now, Greg says currently the way they define assault is really odd. You could have a worker with a broken nose, and it would not be considered an assault under the current guidelines. Similarly, a driver who had hot coffee thrown on him or her, that would not be classified as an assault. Go figure. So what the Transportation Trades Department is doing, they're collecting a lot of data right now to kind of clear this up. And here's a couple of examples that happened. In February, a bus driver in the Bronx was attacked by a passenger wielding a tree branch. The driver was hospitalized. So maybe they don't think a tree branch is a weapon. Normally, it's not. In March, a passenger beat a Richmond, Virginia bus driver, kicked him in the head. And in 2019, before the pandemic, a Tampa bus driver was killed after a passenger slit his throat. What the hell is going on in America? So we'll touch on that. We'll touch on the attack inside that New York subway a couple weeks ago. Greg issued a statement on that, which we covered on the show already. And we're also going to talk, we'll do a wrap-up about the legislative and regulatory agenda. And this was addressed several weeks ago about 30 transportation labor organizations gathered in Washington to outline their agenda of what's missing and what needs to be placed in various laws. So, like I said, Greg's got a lot to talk about on the show today. Well, finally, some good news. The AFL-CIO Maritime Trades Department and a key union, we're talking about the Longshoremen's Association, are cheering President Biden's ban, finally, on Russian ships from U.S. ports. Yes, this was long overdue. The president of the Longshoremen Union, Harold Daggett, called for this ban on March 4th. When Putin sent troops into Ukraine. Jim McNamara is Mr. Daggett's chief of staff, and he announced that Biden, on April 21st, finally banned Russian ships. He said in a telephone interview, "We're very happy to hear that. The ILA's 65,000 members from Maine to Texas usually offload all seaborne imports Russia sends westwards. They won't now." Other maritime unions also cheered, reported Dan Duncan, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Maritime Trades Department. And Dan said the Maritime Trades Department supports Biden's announcement to keep Russian-flagged, Russian-owned vessels from docking in U.S. ports. The MTD also stands with the International Transport Workers Federation in its quest to protect the Ukrainian and Russian civilian merchant mariners who have been caught up in the horrors of this war. "We ask this boycott of Russian ships and cargo be put into place nearly 2 months ago," Daggett said. "The ILA and I are glad that the president and his administration finally responded to our call for action. We just wish they would do it sooner." Now, Biden was blunt about the ban. He said that means no ship that sails under the Russian flag or that is owned or operated by Russian interests will be allowed to dock in the United States port or access our shores. He called the ship ban another critical step we're taking in concert with our partners to deny Russia the benefits of the international economic system that they so enjoyed in the past. So finally, Biden acted on this. You know, there's been some polling by people in America say we like what Biden's doing, but it's not enough. And this is a prime example. This should have been done immediately. Why it took so long? That's a good question. I want to call your attention to a rally that's going to happen 1 week from today in Lorain, Ohio. This is going to be at Black River Landing, Monday, May 2nd from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. There's going to be a lot of players there, including Senator Sherrod Brown, Congressman Tim Ryan, the mayor of Lorain, the mayor of Lordstown, Ohio. And this all has to do with the possibility of thousands of jobs coming to Lorain and Lordstown. And this was spearheaded by a retired captain of the U.S. Navy, Ed Bartlett. We talked about this on the show with Jimmy Hart. In fact, Jimmy's going to be there. Jimmy is president of the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. We had him on the show on March 1st. And Jimmy said that this project was on the five-yard line. And it was ready. They were ready to score the touchdown. Well, apparently, there's a lot of red tape. Why that's... Well, you have to understand you're dealing with the government of the United States, and there's some lawyers that are kind of conservative on all this. You got competitive bidding. You've got the Defense Production Act. In fact, I had a conversation last week with Ed Bartlett, the retired captain, and he's kind of frustrated about this whole thing. He's trying to put the players together. Tim Berger is also going to be there, along with Mike Nisley of the Ohio State Building and Construction Trades Council. So 1 week from today, you might want to be at Black River Landing in Lorain, Ohio. It's called the Marine Highway National Security Ohio Jobs Rally. And what they're essentially talking about is what they call a dry dock, where they would use ships and submarines to be repaired. At a facility in Lorain, and then there's a warehouse in Lordstown. Altogether, this could create 5,000 jobs. 5,000 jobs. So, again, 1 week from today, Monday, May 2nd, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. in Lorain, Ohio. Sherrod Brown, Tim Ryan, Jimmy Hart, Tim Berger. Local building trades will be there as well from Lorain as well as Lordstown. And one more here before we break. The latest Starbucks store successfully voted to unionize last week, 38-27. The store, a flagship Starbucks Reserve roastery and the first to open of only six Starbucks Reserve locations worldwide, is located in Starbucks' hometown of Seattle, Washington. As voting continues across the more than 200 locations that have filed for union elections, Starbucks has filed unfair labor practice charges with the NLRB, alleging that Workers United, that's the group, the union, threatened workers who did not support the union drive. The union has filed several charges against Starbucks, alleging retaliatory firings and other illegal union busting tactics. And right now, I believe about 1920 Starbucks workers lost their jobs as a result of that organizing drive. All right, quick break. When we're coming back, we're going to check in with Joe Zahorek, who is an iron worker at a local 89 running for office in Iowa. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. I want to do a shout out here to Jacob Morrison and the Valley Labor Report. I was on his show Saturday afternoon for about 35, 40 minutes. We had a great conversation talking about the show America's Workforce, and they listen to the show each and every day. We appreciate that. We appreciate so many people gravitating to America's Workforce, which has been, well, let's see, on the air since 1973, and this coming June we'll be celebrating 2 years of podcasting, and we got some data on that. We're in the top 10-15% of all podcasts in America. Now, there's a lot of podcasts in America, so we certainly do appreciate those of you checking out America's Workforce, and hopefully you will continue to do that, because we try to send the message of working men and women in America, what they need to hear, instead of some of the garbage that you're hearing on radio and TV and podcasting all around America. So hats off to Jacob Morrison. What's he doing? And what he's doing in the state of Alabama at the Valley Labor Report. Let's go to Cedar Rapids, Iowa right now. And joining us on our live line is Joe Zahorek. And Joe is with Ironworkers Local 89. Website is IWLU89.com. They have about 280 active members. Joe's active, and he's politically active in various ways. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So I want to get into your campaign here. You're running for a state Senate seat there, and I appreciate you doing that, because I've been saying this on the show for many, many years now. We need more brothers and sisters getting involved and engaged in politics, because we need better people in politics, whether it's on the city, the state, the federal level, and slowly but surely that's happening. But let's get a little background on you. 17 years as an iron worker. What made you decide to go into this line of work, Joe?
Well, it was a family thing. I'm actually a fourth generation union iron worker. All of my dad and all of his brothers were all members of Local 89 at one point or another. So when I graduated high school, I figured, you know, I want to give this a try. They all told me no, and that I'm going to go to college, which I did for a couple of years. But after just sort of aimlessly wandering through the college world, I convinced them to let me give it a try, and I started the apprenticeship back in 2005, and you know, sort of felt that I'd found my calling. I just ended up loving it, so stuck
good
with it, and yeah.
How has the work been in Iowa for iron workers like yourself?
We're currently in quite the boom. It's very busy right now. We're hurting for people. We can always use more, you know, quality help. Over the years, you know, it's varied a little bit, much like it has all across the country in the construction industry. But we've managed to, you know, sort of maintain a steadiness. But currently we are experiencing a big boom in work.
Good, good. So you do a lot of organizing. Let's talk about that, because Iowa is not what you call a very union-friendly state, and I know that's pretty much why you're running for political office. But mm-hmm. How has that been going for you, Joe?
Well, the organizing is, organizing is obviously difficult, you know, nationwide. Companies will invest, you know, quite a bit in keeping their employees away from us union organizers. Iowa is no different. Basically I spend my days going out and finding non-union sites or people to talk to. And Iowa has sort of a friendly demeanor to it. So instead of getting yelled at and thrown off of a job site, you just sort of get kindly escorted off with a pat on the back saying, you know, don't come here again. But the Iowa nice transfers through to the union busting as well. But you know, we've had some successes, which is good. They're few and far between. It's like I said, you'll get a sort of a good run going or a good streak of talking to a group of guys with a company, and then all of a sudden it just goes completely cold. And usually what'll end up happening is I'll run into one of these guys, you know, 6 months down the road, and you come to find out that the company is, you know, giving them all $5 an hour raise, or, you know, giving a couple of the key ones a company truck, and then they sort of threaten the other people that if they talk to us again, you know, it's all illegal, but what are you going to do? You know, an unfair labor practice is nothing to a company. You know, it's a small fine and a slap on the wrist. So,
oh, I hear you. Yeah. That's happening all around America. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. they'll come, there's a few people that'll benefit. Oh, you don't want to go to the union. You don't want to pay all those union dues.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're going to lose your voice. Come on. All that stuff is BS, and we all know that. But at least they're nice when they escort you out. At least they're not handcuffing you and taking you away to some local police station or something like that. That's good.
Correct. The Iowa nice thing transfers through, and the passive-aggressive, you know, go screw yourself sort of shines through.
Okay, let's talk about the outlook here. You know, this Infrastructure Jobs Act is, I don't know if you're getting any money yet. I'm hearing in various states it's starting to trickle through. You know, the bureaucracy with all that, it takes, when you give money out, it takes some time, and there's a process for that. But with that being said, that's, you've got to be excited about the future here. I know the iron workers nationally, they were pushing this thing, and because you guys do the bridges. I'm sure you got a lot of bridges in Iowa that need fixing or total replacement. So how is that affecting your apprenticeship program, Joe?
Well, I know that. So as I already said, we're sort of already experiencing a boom in work, and I know that when this package starts sort of trickling down to, you know, from the state down to our actual municipal areas, that boom is going to increase. So we are actively recruiting to fill our apprenticeships up with even more people. We're trying to bring in as many people as possible, sort of getting ready for it. I know that from that deal, we're looking at a pretty significant airport expansion here in Cedar Rapids, which will be big. That will, you know, provide work for not only the iron workers, but all of the building trades, thanks to the executive order that was signed about federal PLAs from Biden. So, yeah, we're gearing up, and we're starting to, you know, starting to sort of plan ahead on how we're gonna start filling these jobs.
I have to ask you, what are they saying about Biden in Iowa? I mean, you mentioned the PLAs. Biden has been so supportive of unions from day one. The change makeup of the National Labor Relations Board. What are you hearing over there in Iowa?
Well, so I don't think it's any secret that membership has shifted. You know, they tended to lean a little more right, you know, in 2016, and it just sort of got worse from there. But I will say I feel optimistic with some of the accomplishments that the Biden administration has made. Even some of our, you know, hardcore sort of right-wing members acknowledge that, you know, this executive order with the PLAs and the Infrastructure Act, and, you know, they see the benefit of the PRO Act as well, obviously. And if that could get pushed through, I really think we'd be able to swing quite a few of our members back into into the fold with us. It was, you know, originally it was, you know, you're just hearing sort of typical right-wing talking points, but now as these accomplishments come through, we're starting to hear more and more of, you know, I don't want to say I told you so, but, you know, well, you know, this is why we supported him, because he's going to be the most supportive president we've had, you know, in decades for organized labor. So we're starting to get some acknowledgement that we were right in that from the members that would normally be pretty opposed to a Democrat, basically.
Well, in addition to listening to Joe Zahorek, tell him to listen to America's Workforce, because we're spreading the gospel for workers, okay? It's important that that message gets out there. So Let's talk about your politics, your political career. When did you decide, say, you know what, I got to run for office. I need to do something. How did that happen?
Well, it's a long time coming, I guess. I was named the political coordinator for the local back in 2016. I've always followed politics. I've always kept a really close eye on them. They've always excited me for some reason. I was just into them from a young age. And so over the past 6 years, you know, I've just watched the state of our state sort of get worse and worse and worse. Redistricting happened this year, and the district that I live in has became essentially the third most union dense district in the state of Iowa now. It's a very blue collar working class district, whereas before it was still a safe Democratic seat, but it was a sort of more upper class, sort of more affluent Democrat seat that, you know, that would vote on sort of changing the world issues as opposed to the kitchen table issues that the blue collar working class folks that it now has will vote on. So I was looking at the maps and thinking, you know, this is something that I think I'd like to do. I don't really know what made me want to do it, other than I just feel that having, you know, a working class voice, someone with the firsthand perspective up there at the state capitol would be, you know, obviously beneficial for not only the iron workers, not only the building trades, but all of the working class people of the state. But it was a primary, so I didn't want to get involved with all of the mess that accompanies a primary. But a couple of really bad bills got pushed through. Our session is currently still ongoing. It was supposed to end a couple of weeks ago. They're hung up and they're fighting on a couple of things. And when I saw these really bad bills sort of get pushed through, that was when I said, you know what, primary or not, this needs to happen. We need more blue collar people up there. If the state legislature is making decisions that are affecting blue collar workers and blue collar lives, we need some blue collar people up there in the room with them while they're making those decisions. That's why I pulled the trigger and got in.
Gotcha. We should plug your website here. It's joezahorik.com. Joe Zahorik, and you spell Zahorik, Z-A-H-O-R-I-K, joezahorik.com. Running for state senate, that would be District 39 in Iowa. Joe, I got a couple more questions. I want to talk about your platform. I know you want to get into wage theft and worker misclassification, so let's do that next. Yep. Later in the show, by the way, we'll be joining Greg Regan, and I'll tell you, he's got a big week in Washington. He's going to talk about it right here on America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective Democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on at least 6 platforms, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just do this, sign up. Receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings. And as I indicated, at the top of the show. A lot of you are listening to America's Workforce. We're in the top 10 to 15% of all podcasts in America. We certainly do appreciate that. Joe Zahorek is on our live line today. We're talking to him out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He's an organizer for Iron Workers Local 89. They have about 280 active members, 350 when you count the retirees. He's running for political office. This would be your first crack at it, right? You haven't run for any other office until this one. Is that right, Joe?
That is correct. Yep, this is a new venture for me. I'm just diving in head first.
Yeah, imagine there's a lot that you're learning right now. I have to ask you a couple things. You know, the Iron Workers are a sponsor of this show nationally, and also we record the show at Local 17 in northeastern Ohio. Are you getting any help, organizing help from the organizers or maybe the AFL-CIO? I know the AFL-CIO has like a toolkit for union brothers and sisters that decide to go into elective office. Is that part of your MO over there in Iowa?
Well, I'm pretty certain that it will be. We just had our COPE convention, which is the Committee on Political Education. So it's basically at the state level, the state AFL-CIO level. That's when they decide on who they're endorsing and who they're supporting. We had that convention was Saturday, and I received the endorsement. So hopefully that will open some avenues and provide some resources from both the state level and the national level from AFL-CIO. In terms of my international, they've been extremely helpful in giving me all of the coaching and guidance that I could ask for. I'm sure that I've been irritating a couple of them with endless phone calls and questions about what I should be doing next. And they've been very, very helpful to provide me any guidance that I need.
Well, let's talk about your platform. I was reading about wage theft, worker misclassification, which is so prevalent, especially in the trades.
Right.
Are you just hammering that point? Or maybe you can expand on that as far as what you're saying to get elected to that district.
Sure. Yeah. So as I said earlier, this district is, you know, very working class issues. A lot of industrial factory workers, a lot of building trades workers. And, you know, Iowa is a right-to-work state. It's been pretty unfriendly towards its working people for a number of years. It's really bad in about the past decade. And folks are starting to see that, which is good. And it's resonating. You know, the message of we need to strengthen the rights of our working class people is really, really resonating. When it comes to wage class and worker misclassification, what we're seeing here is pretty bad, right? I mean, it's criminal. It's fraud and it's theft, and it should be treated criminally as opposed to just a civil penalty for employers to get caught intentionally doing this. It's resonating well on the doors when I talk about that. You know, the problem is it's obviously not just an Iowa problem. This is a nationwide problem. And I know that nationwide it's billions of dollars that are being lost, you know, and be it tax revenue, you know, workers' comp filings, unemployment insurance, all of these things. So I really think that there's room for this to be a bipartisan solution. I think that getting the right folks in the state house that are willing to, you know, work across the aisle and, you know, really sort of try to come up with a solution, I think there can be buy-in from both sides of the aisle. And when I'm telling people that on the doors, as I'm out talking to voters, that seems to really resonate. Anything that you can sort of mention that, I'll sort of backtrack a little bit. The Democrats are a very small minority in our state legislature. In the Senate, it's 18-32. So getting elected, you know, in this seat, which is a fairly safe Democratic seat, it's going to be an uphill fight, right? It's not like we can go in there and change the world. We're going to be there sort of playing defense still. But what's important to try to do then is work with the majority, right? So we can actually try to get some things done that will help the working people here in the state. And wage theft, I think, is one of the really strong issues that could be a bipartisan effort.
You mentioned that like wage theft and worker misclassification, we're talking about civil penalties, not criminal.
Correct.
if you get elected, will you push for criminal penalties on that?
I absolutely think they should be criminal penalties. Yes, it's intentional theft and intentional fraud trying to defraud the system. And it's theft from the taxpayers of the state. It's theft from the workers that they're exploiting. Yes, to me, it's almost like an organized crime syndicate, right? It's a model that businesses are choosing to employ, right? And they're doing it knowing that if they get caught, the penalty that they will face is a slap on the wrist. Yeah. And I think that needs to, the penalties need to be increased. And it seems to me that actually going after them in a criminal avenue as opposed to a civil avenue would strike home with these folks.
Oh, yeah. It's across the board like that. OSHA, I mean, we need more inspectors. We need tougher penalties.
Absolutely.
When workers get injured on the job. It's a joke. I mean, somebody gets injured on the job and it's like $10,000, maybe $15,000 max.
Right.
That the penalty
right.
is. And with medical care today, come on, that's a drop in the bucket. And lost time, especially on the job. Yeah, there's a lot that needs to be done. Right to work, I would imagine your state was right to work for quite some time. Do you think it would be wise to say, hey, if I'm elected, I'm going to start trying to repeal right to work in Iowa? Is that going a little too far, Joe?
It's not going too far, especially with the folks that I'm speaking to, you know, the constituents that I hope to represent in the Senate. It's absolutely not going too far. We've been right to work in Iowa since 1947. We were one of the original states to adopt it. However, it is not constitutional. It's not codified. It's not actually in our Constitution. So there is actually a path to sort of repeal it. You know, we've came close in the past before when we had all Democratic leadership, and it fell apart, you know, in the end with I guess with compromises and negotiations that had to be made, and that sting of that happening resonates today with labor groups and, you know, just the working people that really pay attention to what's going on up at the State House. The promise, you know, that promise has been made before and not followed. It wasn't followed through. And I would want to be damn sure that if you know, that was a promise that I were to make, you know, that we would stay vigilant and keep our foot on the gas and trying to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like I said, especially going into such a strong minority, that would be a bucket list wish, a wish list item that would definitely be there. But I think it's going to take, you know, a few more terms to try to flip the majorities in both the House and the Senate and the governor's mansion before we could really tackle a big one like that.
Yeah, and I know if we got the PRO Act, that would be one way to eliminate right to work in America.
Absolutely.
But that's a tall order. We all know that, but nonetheless, you got to think in that direction if you want things
Absolutely.
To happen.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, you mentioned that it's not enshrined in your Constitution. Well, that's a good thing because I was just talking recently with one of our brothers in Tennessee, and they want to do that. They got it on the November ballot. They want to enshrine right to work in the state of Tennessee. But there's been a couple of areas, Montana for one, they push back right to work. Missouri had a really good campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So and New Hampshire was another one where it seems like it stopped as far as states going right to work. So that's a good thing. But anyway,
you know, I think we're seeing a movement in the country right now of union support, union favorability. Right. It's the highest it's been in decades. And I think that sort of all plays along with, you know, with right to work being sort of kept out of these places. Is there's, whether you're union or not, people are seeing the benefit of unions, and they're sort of working with us to try to help protect us as much as possible.
Oh, I know that the numbers are reflecting that. In the last 6 months, there's been like a 57% increase in union activity in America. And a lot of that has to do with the changes at the NLRB. And,
mm-hmm.
and of course, the Biden administration being as pro-union as they possibly can. All good stuff. Joe Zahorek joining us on our live line. The election is in November then, right? There's nothing before that? Am I correct?
Nope, there actually is. I have a primary. I have a primary opponent. And so my election is June 7th. We are at, 43 days as of today until the primary. And then the general election is, yes, that one is in November.
Okay. June 7th, the primary. You win that one, then it's on to November then, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we'll stay in touch with you. JoeZahorik.com is the website. JoeZahorik.com. That's Z-A-H-O-R-I-K. He's an iron worker. Iron worker 89, running for state senate in District 39 in Iowa, specifically Cedar Rapids area. Joe, you take care and good luck to you, all right?
Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been fun, and I'll be sure to get as many of our members to subscribe as possible.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcasts. All right, let's go to line number two. Joining us, one of our regulars here, Mr. Gregory Regan, who is president of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, collection of 30-plus unions involved in transportation, TTD.org. In fact, the Ironworkers is the latest union to join the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Greg Regan, how are we doing today, my brother?
I'm great. Thanks, Flash.
You have a very, very busy week ahead. Well, they're all busy, let's be honest.
But
you got to talk to me about the rail service, because I know the farmers, the grain millers, they're all upset because they can't transport their products. We have supply chain issues in America. Greg, explain what has happened here. And this was not just overnight. It took a couple of years for us to get in the situation that we're in right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, you're right. This is not something that happened overnight. This has been going on for at least 6 to 8 years now. And it all goes back to something that is called precision scheduled railroading, which is a fancy term for the hedge funding of America's railroads. And, when we saw, and we've been raising the alarm bells about this for years now, but in the 5 years leading up to the pandemic, so before the supply chain crisis, before the pandemic came, when everything was completely, quote unquote, normal, railroads reduced their workforce by 20% over that 5 year period. They just, and in some cases it was upwards of 30%.
Wow.
And it was not because they were, scraping by and just trying to make ends meet. It was all in pursuit of greater quarterly returns and greater profit. And the other thing they did along with that was they reduced their equipment that was available. They mothballed locomotives. They were reducing inspection times, and everything was geared towards operating as leanly as possible, and basically doing the trying to do less with less, essentially.
Yeah.
And now, once we did have the pandemic and cargo surged and we had the supply chain crisis. I mean, it was created in part by these types of business practices, and it's finally come to the point where the companies that rely on the railroads are fed up, and they've been sending public letters to the Surface Transportation Board and to DOT and to others talking about how they're not getting the service that is required under law.
So right now, instead of hiring more people, they're just using the existing workforce to work overtime, extended hours? Is that what's going on?
In part. The other thing they're doing is implementing these attendance policies, new attendance policies that are just completely, they're extremely harsh. And in many ways, they're so punitive. For instance, you'll be given a bank of 30 points. All right. And, every time you have an excused absence from work. So say, for instance, for a family medical leave absence, say you have a sick mother who you need to take to the doctor, or you yourself are sick, and which is, not uncommon in a pandemic. That's an excused absence, but you're going to be docked points for that. And same with if you are too fatigued to go to work, which happens a lot in an industry like railroading. Sure. You're going to be docked points for that. And when you run out of points, then you're going to be punished, whether it be a suspension of a week. And then if you do it again, you'll be punished for a longer period of time. And if you do it a third time, you're fired. And, I've heard of folks who, they look at the next year here and they see no scenario where they're not going to be fired within, 8 months or so, because they have medical issues they're dealing with. They have family medical issues. In some cases, they're veterans who have to seek treatment for PTSD. And, even pursuing legitimate medical treatment that they need, this new policy is going to be so punitive that they cannot foresee a scenario in which they still have a job.
So is this policy currently in effect, or they're talking about implementing it? Is that what's going on?
No, it's in effect at BNSF. And that's only, frankly, the most recent of the attendance policies and the worst. But this is a trend we've seen that is trying to squeeze out as many work hours out of their current workforce as they can, because they reduced their workforce so much in the years prior.
Yeah. Well, I know they were talking about going on strike. This was a couple of months ago. And then a judge said, no, you can't do that. You can't stop the railroads. So right now, right. I take it we're at an impasse on this issue.
Yeah, we are. And in part, it's all wrapped up in, they're currently engaged in bargaining. I mean, that's the thing to remember about all the rail workforce now. They're still operating on a contract from 2018. They haven't had a raise since 2018. And, the negotiations are at a standstill. Under the Railway Labor Act, railroad workers are not allowed to go on strike. They have to. There's a lot of different steps along the way that need to happen before they can get to that point. That's part of what we're pushing for now, is to get to a release, quote unquote, which would move this process along, and hopefully try to find a fair contract for these workers, because right now, they're still operating on their wages and benefits from 5 years ago.
Ridiculous. Now the hearing, there's a hearing tomorrow by the Surface Transportation Board. I take it all of this is going to come up, and then where does it go from there once you have this hearing done?
Well, so this is an important hearing, because we're talking about reasonable service. There's two things that the railroads are required to provide by law under their quote unquote common carrier obligations are reasonable rates and reasonable service. And the Surface Transportation Board has the authority to oversee all of this. And this is a rare instance of the challenging that the railroads providing reasonable service. And so there are a number of panels over 2 days that are going to be testifying. I will be there tomorrow. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg is going to be there. There's people from the Agriculture Department. There's people from most of the unions, as well as from the agricultural community and the shipping company. So, and we're going to be talking about how bad the service has gotten and what the causes for that are. And at a certain point, yes, the Surface Transportation Board can take all that information and, issue findings and orders, whether it be, you need to ramp up service here. You need to hire this many people. You need to do X, Y, and Z. If the railroads refuse to comply with those, then there can be pretty severe financial ramifications. So,
good.
You know, this is hopefully this is the beginning of shining an important spotlight on what's happening in this industry, and then beginning to have some sort of real consequences for it.
Right. It's just another example of how Wall Street, specifically those hedge funds, have destroyed and hollowed out the middle class in America. We've seen it time and time again. We've talked about this on the show. The Warrior Met situation in Alabama is a perfect example of that when it comes to coal mining in America. All right, we got a couple minutes left here. I want to get into the question is, when is an assault? I thought we had some clear definition on that. But if you're a transit worker, there's a different definition, and apparently they're trying to change all that. Greg, help me out on this one. This is crazy.
Yeah, look, the definition part comes into play because in terms of, you know, federal data for how bad the assault problem is in our national transit systems, you know, if your nose is broken or if your fingers are broken, that's not considered an assault. If you have second degree burns because of coffee thrown in your face, that's not considered an assault under current federal law. So, you know, part of what the result of that is we don't have a really good, accurate data count for how bad the problem is throughout our country, which makes it that much more difficult to create real federal policies that will address this issue. So having better data and a better definition is part of a broader solution that we're pushing for here to try to address this problem once and for all, because it's really just gotten out of control. And, you know, for us, one of the important parts here is if you have more important data, you have more important information, and then you combine that with making sure that you have safety panels and safety committees at the various transit agencies that include unions, which is not something that happens right now, which seems insane to me, that you wouldn't involve the people who are on the ground, who know where the risk factors are, who know what types of threats they're facing, and they're not part of the decision-making process, not part of the planning for how to prevent this. That's just completely out of touch with what the needs are going to be. So all of this is stuff that we're hoping that the Federal Transit Administration will start to implement over the next few weeks here, just to start to really get a better hold on what's happening around the country.
And this has been going on for years. The pandemic just accelerated it. I mean, there's a lot of frustrated people on airlines. They didn't want to wear masks. They assaulted the flight attendants. It's just, it's really sad. But you mentioned the data collection. Are they starting to do that? They're thinking of doing that? Where are we with this right now?
Well, under the infrastructure law that was passed, there was a mandate in there for the Federal Transit Administration to address this problem. One of them is the data, but that's part of a number of things that are going to need to happen here and that were all required by the law. So that will happen. I don't know if it hasn't quite started yet because it's going to be part of a broader rulemaking process, but we've spoken with Nuria Fernandez, the administrator at the FTA, and we've spoken to others who, you know, we feel confident that they're moving quickly and that this will get done soon.
One more thing here before we go. Hats off to those who helped out on that recent subway shooting in New York. And I was reading that 5 members of the Transport Workers Union Local 100 received commendations from the mayor of New York in recognition of their response to what happened. Horrible situation, but again, that's the state of the country today. It's really, really sad. At least they got that individual on that. So, Greg, I'm going to leave it on that note. You got a busy week. I'm going to let you go, and we'll unwind it all next month, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Flash.
You got it. Greg Regan, president of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. You can get more at ttd.org. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, the latest from the United Auto Workers and the North Central Labor Council. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.